Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top comic sales for March 2019 is sold through Diamond to retailers predominantly in North America. Joining me on this is Sam. How you doing tonight, Sam?
I am well, John. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, Eric couldn't join us this time. Wasn't feeling too well. Whatever that happens, it's unfortunate. Always enjoy his input. As always, we're going to be talking about the numbers that are sold into comic stores, not what's sold out, because that data just isn't available. We're going to be talking about, when we look at the breakdown, the top 300, because we've got that going back to February 2003, so we could do apple-to-apple comparisons if we want to. But we've actually got the top 500 comics and stuff. There's just so much comics coming out these days. It's just insane. Far more than I can read. I've actually cut back, and I'm not going to say that's why the numbers are down, but, you know, hey, it happens. This time around, we had just over 6 million units in the top 300, literally 6,003,499 units. So it was an okay month. It's one of those things that, having looked at this data since actually before they switched over to the final invoiced numbers and stuff, having done it for many, many years with the pre-order system and stuff, we always are hitting somewhere between, 4 and 9.5 million units for the top 300. We're a little below, I believe, the kind of that average sales and such for the top 300, but not so much that it's like alarmingly so, but it's not a great sign. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300, unsurprisingly, Marvel had the lion's share of it, as it usually does, with 43.58% of the units and 38.69% of the dollars. Now, if we look at DC, it had 36.87% of the units and 33.66% of the dollars. So, I mean, looking at it one way, Marvel's a clear winner by units, but DC did better in dollars. You know,
it's 43.66, not 33, by the way.
Sorry, you're right. I can't read numbers tonight. It's going to be one of those nights.
Yeah.
But really, in terms of units, they were only off by about 400,000 units, which isn't too bad. And DC was up over Marvel by, what, 1.5 million or so dollars?
About that, yeah. And when we get to the list, almost all of that is in the number top item.
Yeah, it's one of those where there's a couple of things that just kind of skew the numbers this time around, as often happens.
Yeah, DC only had 60 items on the list. Marvel had 93. And if you just take the cover price of those 60 units and divide by 60, they're actually slightly lower at a 409 average cover price, whereas Marvel's 93 units averaged 418 for their cover price. However, when you extrapolate that times the units sold at each cover price, that's where DC's best-selling book and the best-selling book overall is a $9.99 book, which is what accounts for that huge shift in dollars.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think the dollar number is interesting, but it's so easy to skew stuff, just again, by a high-ticket item.
Well, particularly if it's that popular high-ticket item.
Yes. Well, and, DC got lucky this time around. Not lucky, I mean, they kind of engineered it, but they had it this time around. But it's not unusual for Marvel to have it, because their events usually sell pretty well, and they usually put a higher cover price on those these days.
It, also true. But, I mean, we have seen $9 or $10 books before. Usually, they don't have quite this startling impact on these numbers. You know, wasn't Deadpool doing a book for a while that regularly it was $9.99?
About once a quarter, yeah.
Yeah, and then like DC did those Dark Knight 3 issues at $9.99. But when they land somewhere in the middle hundreds, it's one thing. When they
top the list.
And by almost 380,000, it really has a huge impact.
Yeah. Well, again, that one item is just kind of a seismic activity or whatever, because you look at how many units it had. It had more than any publisher other than Marvel and DC.
Yes.
So it's, and not just by a little bit. I mean, it's actually not that far above Image or whatever, but you know, you could almost combine, I think, all the rest of the publishers in the top 300. Nah, I guess you'd have to take out maybe IDW or Boom, but certainly it's well above, it's like twice the sales of all the non-premier publishers.
Yeah, and let's take a look. Let the listeners in on what that is. The top-selling item, of course, was Detective Comics issue 1000 with an estimated 526,941 units. Just to give you know, like you said, so much more than all the public. Here's the other thing. That is over 300,000 more than Marvel's total in the top 10.
Yeah, well, Marvel didn't have a great month top in the 10. Top 10, yeah.
I agree, but again, you're talking, and it's not quite, but it's close to 400,000 units more than the number two item on the list.
Yeah, well, and also that the Detective Comics 1000 was up over 700% from the previous issue.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just insane. And it's one of those things that we know it's going to fall right back down with 1001.
Yes, I agree.
It's just the way it goes. It was kind of interesting this time around because the numbers came out a little later than they usually did, near the end of the month, which is how they used to come out many years ago on a regular basis. So when I was actually crunching the numbers about 2 weeks ago now, I not only had all that information, but I actually knew everything that had shipped in April. Now, if you just look at the top couple of items here on the list, I mean, Detective Comics 1000, we know 1001 is not going to sell anywhere near as well. So there's going to be a huge drop off of, you know, 400,000-ish or probably well over
probably
that.
Probably more, yeah. Probably more, yeah. Like 150 or more.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 450 or more.
Absolutely. So we know all that is going to plummet. Okay, so that's better part of a 500,000 units they don't have on the board. The next item, Batman Who Laughs, The Grim Knight, that's a one-shot. That's not going to be on the board. Sure, maybe we'll get another Batman Who Laughs, so kind of make up for it. But technically, this title won't be there. Doomsday Clock 9 actually shipped. It was only 6 weeks late and 13 weeks since the previous issue, so not too bad for that title, I guess, with 120,079 units. That next issue's been delayed again and again and again and again, and I think is set to come out at the tail end of May. I'm betting it's not going to come out until June. It's effectively quarterly these days. So that's another, you know, 120,000 units they're not going to have on the board. So, I mean, just off those top three items, there's the better part of 750,000 units DC's not going to have next month.
Yeah, and not only that, at rank number 6, Heroes in Crisis number 7, didn't we hear that it was delayed as well this past week? And it might not be in there.
I think number 9 is delayed. I think okay. 8 actually did come out in the month of April. Matter of fact, I'm certain it did because I read it and I was I would have preferred it to be indefinitely delayed. I was not happy with it, but they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, there's a number of things there at the top that, sure, they've got them this month, but it's not repeatable sales. And I don't think that's a good position for these publishers to be in.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that at ranks 4 and 5 are the two issues of Batman, which did right around 84,000 units. And, I mean, that's below, obviously, where it had been for the last, you know, many, 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 many years, both for most of this run and the previous run. So I definitely think the title is cooling off. Now, it's still obviously the top-selling ongoing title, so it's not like DC should panic or something. But I do think that a number of readers are just becoming a bit disenchanted with it. You know, and all this talk of Tom King having a 105-issue, you know, arc planned out or whatever, or, you know, only 67 issues into it. It's like, geez, another how much?
Well, double shipping, it's a little over a year.
Double shipping, it'd still be 2 years.
105 gets you, it's another 50 issues almost, or 40.
I think in this day and age, it is egotistical for virtually any comic book writer to say, I've got a game plan that goes over 100 issues, and think he'll see it through.
particularly on a major corporate property. Like, you know, on creator-owned stuff, it's different. You know, Dave Sims from day one said, I'm doing 300. He did 300. Brian K. Vaughan and on Why the Last Man and, like, Bill Willingham on Fables both pretty much said it's going to be about this long, and they got there.
I can only think of one modern creator that's done it more than once.
Okay, who's that?
Kirkman on Invincible and Walking Dead.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
And during the time he's done all of that, how many other titles have failed to come anywhere close to that kind of a run?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously it can be done, but on, particularly to your point, creator-owned versus corporate, on a corporate book, Batman of all books, to say I'm going to do a 100-plus issue run, I think, is a little outrageous. And for an editor to say, yeah, go for it, is almost irresponsible.
Yeah.
Particularly given how much the rest of the DC universe reshapes in that sort of time frame.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. With the glacial speed of Doomsday Clock, it's taken about as long as that series.
Even with Doomsday Clock being chronically slow, and that's an understatement, you just look at how much the DC universe has actually changed in that time frame.
Yeah. But to be fair, they started at the same point.
Did they?
Well, Batman number one came out a week or two after Rebirth number one.
Okay, but Doomsday Clock didn't start until 2017, I thought.
But in theory, Doomsday Clock was announced with Rebirth number one as this is kind of where it's going, and this is the future of the universe. And
okay, if you're talking about the meta arc for the DC stuff, that's one thing. Doomsday Clock, the title itself, wasn't introduced for another year or two after that.
That is true. But it was announced at the exact same time as Rebirth came out, as I remember correctly. It was like, oh, and by the way, here's where we're going.
I don't really see it that way, but maybe I'm being a little too much of a literalist on some of that. Either way, you know, the titles that were coming out when Doomsday Clock launched and where the universe is at now, I mean, it's night and day difference.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about that. Is quite a bit the last few months, is with as slow as Doomsday Clock is coming out, is it going to have the intended impact on the universe as, again, at the end of Rebirth, we all thought it would?
Well, when Doomsday Clock launched, other titles that same week were Blue Beetle number 15 and Commandy Challenge number 11. No, Commandy Challenge is out of continuity, but how many people even kind of really remember that?
Yeah.
You know, and Detective Comics has had like 30 or something issues released in that kind of time frame. So it's the cadence and pacing at DC is all over the place, and we're at least a Superman or two down the line from where, you know, certain things started at.
Oh, yeah, and a full volume of the Justice League and all kinds of, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So DC did well at the top of the list. I mean, they had the top six slots, which is pretty good. Matter of fact,
and
they had
seven of the top 10.
Yeah, most of the top 10. But, you know, then you hit a batch where there's like almost 10 items in a row or so of Marvel and stuff. I mean, once you get past the top 10, if you discount Justice League, they have nothing else in the top 20. Now, granted, they've got two Justice Leagues there, although actually one of them is in the top 10.
Yeah, they have 10 and 12 of the two Justice League issues, 19 and 20.
Now, if I were a publisher and I had to pick, do I want to have the top 10 books or the second 10 books? I'd go for the top 10, absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
But I just, I don't know. A lot of these DC books are not doing as well as they could be. Marvel's doing not top of the list, but generally a lot of their titles I think are doing as well or better than the DC books, and there's just more of them.
Well, yeah, there's over 50%. 93 items as compared to 60.
And there's no compelling reason for Marvel to slow down. You know, there's, I don't think anyone could justifiably claim that they would sell more by publishing less. Certainly, I think there'd be a benefit to doing fewer titles, particularly if you could get just the lower selling ones off the board and focus the efforts on the higher selling ones. But it never really kind of pans out that way.
Well, but as both DC and Marvel, particularly you look up at the top of this list, particularly like the top 15 or so, what you're seeing is it's Batman and Spider-Man that drive all that traffic in both, you know, those are the two characters in those universes. Because besides, you know, Batman Who Laughs, Detective Comics, the two issues of Batman, and Justice League that Batman's in. You then have the two Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man City at War, and a Venom book. I mean, the top 13 items on the list are all Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah, they're popular characters. It's a little surprising Wolverine hasn't kind of gotten back up there, but I think having had him out of play for so long kind of killed a little bit of the sales juice there, because he's a popular character. Although he usually hasn't been at the top of the list. There have been a few times, though. I'm trying to think what other solo Marvel character is one that would be likely to give kind of Spider-Man a run for that top position over at Marvel.
Well, when it's good, and granted, it's been a while, but when it's good and it's getting back up there right now, Hulk can be. It usually takes a special artist and a special writer and some other things. But like I said, when Hulk's really good, it can sit at the top of the list for a while. It can also languish near the bottom.
Typically, when we've seen Hulk at the top of the list, it's a new number one. It's a big splash, bold new direction. And I don't know that it usually stays up there after that first issue.
Well, if you go back to like the Dale Keown era, some of the Peter David stuff.
Even some of the Peter David stuff, the reason he was able to be on so long is it didn't sell well.
Didn't sell as well, yeah. Some of the early days of the Red Hulk stuff. Like I said, when the Hulk's really hot, which it appears to be right now, it does well, or extremely well.
Yeah, certainly it's at a creative kind of, you know, high point right now. It's got a lot of good hype and stuff, which I think is great for the title and whatnot. But it's not a character that, generally speaking, I would say is likely to sit there at the top of the charts. It certainly had its moments, but often it's around the time of like a Hulk kind of event.
Oh yeah, I forgot the Planet Hulk era. There's another time.
World War Hulk, that kind of stuff. So it's had some points where it's done well. I would say really that would be in the 2007-2008 time frame. But most of the time, that title is selling, you know, 50,000 units or under. Now, granted, 50,000 units, still a top 20 book these days.
Yeah.
But having just pulled up a really quick kind of ad hoc chart on the Hulk sales, really the only time it was sustaining over kind of that 50, 60,000 range was, again, 2007, 2008.
Which was the early days of the Red Hulk, right?
I'm trying to remember, and I don't recall.
And again, I don't think your charts go back far enough, but I seem to remember when they used to publish like the top 10 or 20 in like the back of Wizard magazine, it was always in there, like, again, back to the Dale Keown era.
Well, I think if you're going back to like the early 90s and stuff, and my data does not go that far, even with the pre-order stuff, that is just such a different time and marketplace.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, both a little before and actually during the early Image days. And man, when things were hot back then, the stuff we're seeing here wouldn't even really show up on a chart. It's so low.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, literally, there were things that would sell, you know, a million units or whatever. And granted, it was almost all to collectors and speculators and whatnot. And that's part of what kind of burnt out a lot of the market in the 90s. But it still sold it. Yep. You know, these days, you've got a top-selling book and 500,000 units is still really impressive. You know, the only thing I can think of in the more modern times that's gotten around that 1,000 units was that first Star Wars number one by Marvel.
Million units, yeah. It's the only one I can remember since I've been doing these.
So it's one of those things they've shown it can be done. You need a just an amazing creative team on just a you know, unique and blockbuster property.
Yeah.
So not easy.
Or you need a ton of gimmicks. Star Wars, yes, it was Star Wars, and yes, you had John Cassidy doing interiors. But as I remember, that thing had a million covers with every superstar cover artist you could think of.
True.
That Justice League with all the crazy state covers, I think, got over 500,000. And again, that wasn't even a great artist. That was just Photoshop chicanery.
Yes, yeah, that was Justice League of America number one with the 50 states, Puerto Rico, a few other things kind of tossed in there for the heck of it.
And the standard cover was just Old Glory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, and again, that's something that like you said, that's Photoshop.
Yeah.
You know,
and that wasn't even unique artwork.
Get a decent set of images for the flags and just warp them into the right shape for the cover or whatever. It was very clever. It's also a highly effective cover gimmick. We'll go with that. You know, at least when they did, what was it, the Godzilla one, they at least did different actual art for the covers of the different stores getting stomped or whatever.
They did something at least different. And like I said, the Star Wars one had a ton of covers too, but those were all unique pieces of art.
Yeah.
And all by huge names. I mean, there was an Alex Ross one, there was a J. Scott Campbell one, there was a Adam Hughes. I mean, they found every big name cover artist they could and got them all to do at least one cover.
Well, and again, with Detective Comics 1000, they did decade covers.
Yep.
For each of the different of the decades that Batman's been in. And that's not a bad gimmick. You know, I haven't actually seen all the covers, so I don't know if it was a, you know, great gimmick or not, but you know, they went with it and it certainly helped sales.
Yep. Well, maybe. Detective 1000 might have sold here with one cover. Who knows?
It would have sold well. I don't think it would have sold over the half million.
Yeah.
I do think the covers were a significant factor. I wish we could, you know, just jump to an otherwise equal parallel world where they just hadn't invented the concept of variant covers and see how it sold there. I've got to wonder if that would be a more interesting universe to do these discussions in or just a more depressing one to do these discussions in. Because I at times question if the industry can survive without all of these variant covers. I mean, there's just such a reliance on them.
I still think the issue is marketing/storytelling. The stories do nothing to encourage a new reader to buy monthly books. They're expensive. They're hard to find. And almost any new reader, if such exists, is getting trades.
Well, yeah, because the other thing is the issues are incomplete.
Yeah, exactly. They're incomplete. They're not. They do very little to. The monthly format is in no ways the format anything is written to or marketed to or sold to or widely available in the mass market to.
It's funny because TJ and I were talking about that on the trade side. Because I agree, the trade is kind of the default target format the stories are written for. They just happen to be serialized out into the monthly issues or biweekly or whatever.
Not only are they the monthly or the way their stories are told, ultimately they're where the marketing is too, at least to the non-initiated. Your average person that's going to look for a comic book story, oh, I saw a Batman movie or the Avengers movie just came out or whatever. If they don't know where a comic store is or they don't happen to be next to one, the default's going to be log on to Amazon. And Amazon's going to show you a million Amazon Avenger trades.
Yeah, it's interesting because the other discussion I had with TJ was we're in a time where, again, Avengers and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a great example on how these characters are so widely accepted these days. I went through the trade sales on Iron Man thinking, you know, we've got a bazillion of these things that have been collected over the last decade or so. Shouldn't, if it's a high-profile character, and I would argue Iron Man is maybe the highest profile out of all of those Avenger characters from the movies and such, and it's a fairly decent translation of the comic version, shouldn't we be seeing more kind of activity or whatever of those titles? And really, we don't. I don't think any one of those trades have been on the list more than maybe 5 or 6 times.
Well, but again, that's in the direct market. I would argue places like Amazon and the Barnes & Nobles that are left are your default spinner racks, and they don't have single issues.
No, absolutely. I think certainly trades is what they're going to sell there. I just don't know that those trades are moving in mass quantities because I think most of the people who are watching the movies and stuff are fine with that. I don't think they feel the need to go track down the source material.
I 99% agree. But I do think the 1% that might be interested in tracking down the comics, they're never going to show up on these direct market numbers, at least not for quite some time.
Generally, I would agree with you on that. I think if you've got a casual fan and they're looking for the stuff, they're likely to find it either digital at Amazon, at a Barnes & Noble, or maybe at a convention they happen to go to and they find somebody who's got the trades half off or something.
Yeah, or even, you know, like my kids get as many of their comics from me, who takes them to a comic store on a regular basis. They get as many when they bring home the Scholastic order form we fill out with mom as they ever get going in the store with me every week.
Yeah. I think if you're targeting a younger audience, if you can get into that Scholastic marketplace and you've got something that can click there, I think that's a good opportunity and a good venue to go through.
Well, and to be fair, and I've said this before, it for the friends I have that, you know, start to ask me questions, you know, as the comic book guy. Hey, you know, I did like Iron Man in the movies, or ooh, I really like Thor, and, you know, what do? I go to my bookshelf and hand them a trade. Mm-hmm. I don't go digging through long boxes and start handing them issues.
No, it's pointless to do that. You'd have to hand them a number of them to get a complete story. That would probably be enough to scare them off. So I just want to read a little. You yeah. hand that same amount of story in a trade, and for them, I think it's less intimidating.
Yeah.
So I do think the way these stories are packaged is counterproductive to building up a bigger audience.
I don't know if it's counterproductive to building up a bigger audience. It's counterproductive to the monthly issue market. And again, we don't know how these books are doing more in the mass market, how they're doing in, you know, there's a lot of things we don't know.
True, true. I do think we're starting to see a bit more of an outreach into those other markets.
Yep.
I think the DC Giants over at Walmart is a good example of that.
Yeah, but even those aren't really single issues in the traditional way you'd think of them.
No, they're not. They're not quite trades either. They're really they're kind of an American manga format, if you will.
They really are.
You know, a couple of different stories that are just kind of thrown into the same packaging because they can be. It's a weird format, but it's one of those things that, to your point, there are a lot of the upper end of the list supported by a couple of key characters. A lot of the other ones that are up in that area happen to be ones that have a bigger kind of mass market awareness these days, be it, you know, X-Men, Daredevil, you know, characters like that. Or even ones that have had maybe not such a great track record in the movies like the Fantastic Four, but are still out there. It's a bit of an exception, I think, to have DC or Marvel kind of a property up in this area that's not a character that somebody would, could, or should know about from a TV show or a movie.
Yeah.
The only one I'm seeing really in the top 30 or so is Cosmic Ghost Rider, destroys Marvel history.
Yep.
And even then, you could argue on a couple of technicalities, because, well, Ghost Rider, not this one, but whatever is known, the person this character is actually known under another identity that in the mass market. So, I mean, you could argue that. But, man, after that, Domino Hotshots at rank 43 or thereabouts is... Well, even she was in Deadpool. Young Justice has a cartoon. Invaders, most of those characters are known, you know, Cap, a Human Torch, if not that one, etc. Man, you gotta go ways down to hit a one that in recent memory hasn't had a fairly high profile movie or TV show that pretty much any, if you go into, you know, your average office of, you know, media savvy type, I mean, not massively media, but, you know, modern geeks, most of these people will have been aware of either the Catwoman movie or the Batman animated series that Harley Quinn came out of. They may not know she came out of it, but even then, they'd know her from Suicide Squad.
Or the video games, the Arkham Knights. She was a major character in all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, arguably the two... boy. The two you could most, I think, begin to kind of say that about. Conan the Barbarian, arguably, yes, there was a modern movie. It was widely panned and not seen by a lot of people.
Yeah, but I would think a lot are at least aware of the Schwarzenegger one.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Fair enough. And so, I mean, after that, you really get down to the Invaders.
And even that, because of Cap and Bucky, I would argue are fairly
yes,
well known.
I agree. They wouldn't be familiar with the name Invaders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But man, beyond that, we're starting to get down into the Age of X-Men spinoff stuff. So they wouldn't know Prisoner X, but they would know the X-Men, of course.
Spawn hasn't had a movie in 40 or 30 years, if you're, I'm trying to remember when that movie came out.
It's been a while, but I'm wondering if there's at least enough general populace awareness of the character, and it could go either way on that. I don't know.
No, Teen Titans Go has been around forever.
Well, and there's a Titans TV show currently. I mean, part of it is just showing how much of this stuff they've so successfully marketed these days.
That's true.
You know, we're at a point where there's so many new episodes of so many different TV shows that I would not be the least bit surprised if we have not met or exceeded the level of, you know, literally a new superhero-based TV episode on average a day over the course of a year, i.e. 365 over the course of a year.
Possible. That seems a little high, but it's possible.
I don't know if it's high or not. I you know, between the CW shows, then you've got the different streaming ones with the Netflix shows and stuff like that. We're certainly getting towards within the realm of possibility if we haven't hit it already.
Absolutely.
But even with that mass proliferation of characters and such, again, the sales, not brilliant. You know, most of these are doing 20 to 50,000 units or whatever, or well below that if you start to get out of the top 100. I mean, there are things that are kind of launching into, you know, what would have been cancellation numbers a decade or two back easily.
Yep.
And I would argue even some of them could be getting into those levels now because they've ended the Titans series in the comics. It's at rank 87 with number 35, which I think there's one more issue that was released after it. I'm not sure. But then what launched underneath that was like the Dial H for Hero comic from the Wonder Comics imprint over at DC.
Yep.
Now, I don't think they were expecting that to, you know, light the sales on fire or whatever, but at least I don't think they should have been. I enjoy the book, but it does strike me as more of a niche comic than most. And there are a couple of these things that particularly when we start looking at the, like those second issues of those Age of X-Men miniseries, a lot of those are hitting the standard sort of, you know, 40 or 50% drop for a Marvel second issue.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that's just how heavily they promote the first issues. And the fact that the X-Men line is still kind of continuing over an Uncanny and stuff, irrelevant to all of these things. I'm wondering if they're gonna reintegrate those characters back into the mainstream or what's going on. We've got a couple of issues that had some noticeable jumps. Supergirl, I believe that was an Art Germ variant.
Amazing Spider-Man 17 had a pretty big jump.
It was the first part of the Hunted storyline.
Yeah.
So that one's gotten a decent amount of promotion as kind of a mini Spider-Man event sort of thing.
Immortal Hulk 15, obviously. Daredevil number 3, almost over 40%.
Mm-hmm.
At rank 19.
Let's see, did that have... I think that one had some variants. That one, I think, had... Let me check. It had a John Romita Jr. variant. It was a 1 in 50.
Catwoman number 9, just over 35% increase with number 9.
That one, I think, was also an Art Germ variant.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a hot cover artist these days, and I've seen some of his work. It's beautiful. I can totally understand why people are picking those up.
Supergirl 28, that's a 62% increase.
Yeah, that was the Art Germ one I mentioned.
Yeah. Marvel Comics Presents number 3 had a almost 60% increase.
That had another 1 in 50 variant on it.
Okay. Yeah, some of these are just insane.
Yeah, but it's kind of that whack-a-mole approach of toss some variants on a handful of books every month and get some sales.
That can't be right. Was Green Arrow really that low? I see Green Arrow 50. No, that is your calculation.
Give me a...
No, that's my decimal point. Never mind. I just didn't see the decimal point.
Okay. Say, give me a rank.
It is at rank 92. It was the number 50 issue at 21,423. Out of the corner of my eye, it looked like 210%. That's a 21.7%.
Ah, yeah. Sorry. So much data, I got to kick the font size down sometimes.
Well, no, and I've got it down at 80% size, so it all fits on my screen.
Ah, yeah. Well, I got a bigger screen, and even then, at 100%, I have a hard time reading it. My eyes not as young as they used to be. Yeah, it's... Even with a 20% increase, Green Arrow 50 sold, you know, 21,423 units.
Yeah.
It's not brilliant. And this is a character that's going on a seventh season of a TV show.
Yep.
And granted, it's a different version of the character, but still, I find it kind of funny when there have been a couple of characters on the Arrow TV show that have had far more exposure there than they ever had in the comics. And I'm thinking particularly of Wild Dog. It's just kind of funny. But, you know, there's an audience for the TV shows so much more than there is for these comics.
Is Wild Dog being published currently anywhere in any form or team? Or?
Last he was seen was Cave Carson.
Okay, so that's not really being published.
No, and he was a you know, supporting character there versus the main. But even then, I think he showed up in more issues of that than the four issues in one special he had as a solo character back in, I want to say the 80s, but it might have been the 90s.
Vibe's not doing anything these days either, is he?
Not since his title, it was a spinoff of the previous Justice League of America, ended. I don't think he's been seen anywhere since. Unless they maybe killed him off briefly in some crossover or something like that, and I've just forgotten about it. But for that matter, even characters like Killer Frost that was in the last Justice League of America title, which I think was yet a different one than the one that Vibe had spun out of originally. How many Justice League of America titles have they done since Rebirth? Are we on, like, the third? Or maybe they don't have one now because they ended that to start Justice League Odyssey, and Justice League Dark.
Well, there was Justice League when it launched, the Brian Hitch book. Then they went to Justice League of America. Then they relaunched the Justice League book, and then they brought in the colon books since then.
But even that's just since Rebirth.
Yeah, since, that's just since Rebirth, exactly.
Since New 52, they had a Justice League and a Justice League of America.
And they relaunched Justice League at one point, so they had three during the New 52.
Yeah.
Plus, in the New 52, you had the Dark, you had several there, too.
Yeah, they had a couple of different variants as well.
Yeah,
they had, for Justice League of America, they had a volume in 2000, obviously they had the original volume way back when, but a volume in 2006, 2013, 2015, and 2017.
So that's four since the New 52.
Yeah, the 2006 predates the New 52.
Oh, okay, so they got the one in just before, okay. So three since.
Yeah, because it was 2011 that New 52 started.
Got it.
Yeah, that's the other thing that makes these things a little challenging to keep track of, is they just rotate the titles so damn often. And they're at the point where they kind of have to. You know, you look at a lot of these things that are sliding down into that 20,000-ish sales range, and you look at a lot of them, and it's like, yeah, they're probably going to end this and relaunch it as something else. Maybe not immediately, but before too much longer. I mean, again, we've already seen Titans end. I don't think they're going to relaunch that. They seem to have a dislike for those classic Titan characters these days.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what they're doing there.
It seems ironic to have a TV show on the DC Universe streaming service for Titans featuring some of these classic characters and then be killing some of them off in the comics or otherwise destroying them.
Well, and we spent the whole New 52. Again, this didn't affect me personally because it wasn't a big deal to me, but we spent the whole New 52 era with a large contingent of people begging for Wally to come back, and then they've done what they've done with Wally.
Yeah, that just floors me.
Yeah,
it's the kind of thing that I think is so short-sighted, because I think there's a bit of a pendulum that swings back and forth with the comic audience, and as new creators come in, they try to restore what they liked growing up and reading comics that the intervening almost generation of writers kind of destroyed because they were trying to put back what they enjoyed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be, I think over time, we may be shifting between, you know, the Barry Allen and the Wally West flashes over the next couple of decades or who knows what. It's just because they did some radical changes in the past and people are trying to keep continually fix what they feel is wrong with it, and nobody agrees as to what's really wrong. That's why we get things again, like the Age of X-Men, kind of going back to the original Age of X-Men, you know, that they did, two decades ago or something. Cause somebody thought it was a cool idea and they want to redo it and revisit it. And it wasn't a bad idea. This isn't bad stories, but, you know, are we going to get in another 10, 20 years, another variant on this? Age of Magneto or whatever. Or of course, you could argue House of M might have been that or whatever, but still.
Well, and with Dark Knights and now this announced Year of the Villain, and DC's constant belief that their problem is superheroes still floors me.
Well, and there's a long history of that over the last decade or two.
Yeah, there really is. Yeah, no, yeah.
Everything from Forever Evil, let's put the villains in the spotlight. You got to do that periodically. Good villains, good heroes, got it. But then you look at 52, you look at Trinity, you look at a few other stories where a lot of it was basically if we could just get Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman out of the way, as if those are holding them back. I think they've lost sight of what it is that they've been publishing. And I think at times Marvel loses sight of some of it too, but in a different way. I think they lose sight of the fact that they've actually got a rich and deep continuity that they can do a lot with and just kind of, you know, downplay it and ignore it at times. But it always comes back because it's part and parcel of the DNA of the Marvel Universe. With DC, and I think the damage was originally done with Crisis on Infinite Earths, every time they restart the stuff, it's gotten to me where when I was actually reading that DC Year of the Villain one-shot or whatever, I was trying to remember what is the current state of continuity for a couple of different characters, and I honestly wasn't sure. Because even just since the start of the New 52, one or two of these characters has their backstory literally redone a few times.
Well, and I think that goes back to Crisis, but it got really bad with the New 52.
I'm saying even if you ignore everything prior to Flashpoint.
Yes. No, I agree. But here seems to be the issue. No writer / editor seems... This goes back to what you're saying about wanting to redo what they grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a character's history seems based on either the writer and editor's knowledge of the character's history or the parts of the character's history the writer and editor like.
Yeah. Yeah.
The part they don't know or don't like doesn't exist. The part they do does, and when you change writers or editors, it completely changes the backstory to what this new group of people likes or remembers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes even without changing the writer or the editor, maybe there's an edict from above, or just they realize what they're doing isn't working and they flip it.
So that's, but arguably that's an editor of some sort.
Probably.
I mean, whether it's a higher up editor, or like individual book editor, but it's an editorial decision of some sort.
I mean, you look at, I'm going to say most of the characters, I mean, just looking at some of the titles here, they've flip-flopped a number of times since just the beginning of the New 52 with DC in 2011 on Green Arrow, on Deathstroke, on the Titans a few times, certainly on Supergirl, Nightwing, Aquaman, absolutely on Superman.
Superman switched twice since Rebirth. Forget the New 52.
Well, in Rebirth is when he switched places. And even then they redid it again.
That's what I mean. They redid it again. There's been two since Rebirth.
One character, two histories.
There's the history that started Rebirth, and there's the history now.
Yeah. And it's collateral damage on other characters with part of that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's funny because in the same time, Marvel's gone through a few different Wolverines and Thors and stuff like that, but they're at least different characters. And it's not like the timeline's been completely shattered, even though they did do the stuff with Secret Wars, arguably redoing the timeline, but really didn't seem to make any difference.
Well, and that's a whole different mess. Yes. DC seems to think heroes being heroics the problem. Marvel seems to think the name of the person in the suit's the problem, both of which I think are crazy ideas.
Yeah, I wonder if they're just not embracing the properties they've got.
Yeah.
I mean, even Shazam, they've essentially turned a solo character into a team book, which, you know, can be done, but I don't know if... It's funny, I'm not going to say I don't know if I would have done it with that character, because absolutely at one point, 10, 15 years ago, I absolutely would have, but I'd have done Shazam as a live-action show a la Power Rangers. Literally give them some kind of device, call it a Shazammer, that they put the little toy in or whatever, shout Shazam, they become the hero. Because you've got the red costume one, the green costume one, the purple costume. I mean, all the different colors now with Shazam. It literally is just like Power Rangers.
The interesting thing is, you go back to the Golden Age, even though, I mean, there was four or five of them even back then.
There were, certainly with Captain Marvel Jr., Mary Marvel, and...
the old guy.
Uncle Dudley, Uncle Marvel, who didn't technically have powers, but yes, he certainly had a suit. And then you could toss a few more in if you went with the hillbilly and other Lieutenant Marvels. So certainly franchising that character out, not new. But I think they've gone beyond that with the essentially taking the Flashpoint riff on the character and bringing that into the mainstream continuity with this version.
Well, and have you seen the film?
I have not seen the film.
The film went that full, the five-color route, so
yeah.
I think it's here to stay for a while.
And I'm not totally against that, but I'd rather see it as establish the Shazam character again, which I don't feel they've done, and then bring in the Shazam family.
Yeah. But yeah, like we said, Mary and Billy and Freddie particularly, I mean, those three all have fairly lengthy histories.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, I'm not opposed to a Shazam family, but given it was teased again at the start of Rebirth, and it took until recently for us to even get it, disappointing.
Yeah.
Let's see. If we look over at rank 30, bouncing up just a little bit again, we got Walking Dead, issue 189 at 43,061 units. Again, we've been seeing this kind of cool off a little bit of late, not too surprising. But again, one of the longer-lived narrative continuities in comics these days.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. If you filter Marvel and DC out, you're left with, it's an interesting list of what's up top, and the fact that it's Walking Dead's not really probably surprising anyone. The fact that Spawn is still the second one at rank 57 with 30,391, I do think would surprise most people.
Well, and if they both come out on a monthly basis as they have been, Spawn's going to hit issue 300 before Walking Dead hits 200.
Yes.
By half a year or so. And I think at least at that point, Spawn, I think, is undoubtedly going to outsell Walking Dead.
Yeah, Spawn 300 or so pretty well, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But it'll have been the first time in a little while since it's done that. But then a lot of the other titles, we've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer at 25,489 units. Sabrina the Teenage Witch launching its first issue at 25,314 units. What's interesting is we've got the life and death of Toyo Harada from Valiant's first issue.
Is that a one-shot or a mini?
I was thinking it was a mini. Honestly, I am not entirely sure.
Okay.
Because I've kind of backed out of the Valiant universe. I just wasn't able to keep up on my reading, and that fell by the wayside. It's good stuff.
Yeah, well, I backed out of Valiant a while ago too. And I mean, with a title like that, it can't really be an ongoing, but it could certainly be a mini. It could also easily be a one shot.
I'm pretty sure it's a I don't know. I can't tell from the solicit. Oversized format. I'm not sure.
And then you've got the Transformers relaunch at rank 90.
Yeah, that did what 21,757 units. Far cry from when it first launched at the top of the list back in 2003 from Dreamwave.
Yeah,
was it then unknown?
Little Bird by Image. I'm not familiar with a first issue here. At, what is this? Rank 94, 19,898. It looks like.
James and I reviewed that, and not for me.
Which one was that?
That was the one where it was hard to tell at first if it was like a historical tale. Oh, no, wait, it's some kind of alternate future kind of a thing.
Oh, it's amazing how often when I listen to the weekly spotlights, I remember the reviews of the indie books, but I have no idea what the title was.
I can understand that.
Yeah, and then now you're getting into some ongoings again. Oblivion Song, 13s. Here at rank 96, Paper Girls number 26 is at rank 104, Die is at rank 108.
Now, one of the ones that's interesting here at rank 122 is Sharky Bounty Hunter, second issue, that's again the Mark Millar one. It dropped over 50%, 51.82% to be exact, from the 31,399 down to 15,127.
Now, see, that I do remember you guys reviewing the first issue, and it was odd because you both really enjoyed it, but both said you weren't going to continue with it.
It was fun. It just seemed like a kind of a riff on Lobo, and there was nothing that made me feel that I had to read it.
Yeah.
And I'm actually trying to still be more selective on what I read.
Yeah, no, nothing wrong with that.
It's the kind of thing that a year or two back, yeah, I probably would have gotten, but there's not enough hours in the day.
Ooh, I didn't even realize this. Transformers number 2 is also on this list at rank 140, down over 40% to 12,871.
Yeah, it's just such a lower number than how that property had done in the past. I think IDW and Hasbro just mismanaged the Hasbro properties over there, and this is just feeling some of the damage of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably true.
Yeah.
I will say this, for all the seemingly positive press it receives from comic fans, and I've read them, I don't love them as much as most, but I'm enjoying them. Black Hammer, Age of Doom number 9, rank 166, barely over 10,000 units. I don't know. At this point, it's hard to, you know, what qualifies as an independent hit these days?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not even in the top half of the list, so I wouldn't say it's hit on those grounds. People may love it and stuff. I read some early stuff in there and just didn't care for it, but it just wasn't my sensibility. I know there are a lot of people that are big fans of it.
Well, a lot. There's about 10,000 of them at the most.
But they're surprisingly vocal.
Yes.
A little above that, we've got it rank 154. We've got Lazarus Risen, the new, more quarterly, I guess, series for Lazarus. First issue, 11,362 units. Going to be curious to see how that trends going forward. Yeah, there's some of these things that are doing... I mean, you just look at the sales numbers, and they're not doing great. I mean, GoGo Power Rangers number 18 is 8,918 units. Yet, you know, I think Boom and Hasbro and so forth are happy with how that's doing. They are going to relaunch it soon. And frankly, it's a little lower than I would have expected. I don't think they came out of Shattered Grid as strong as they could have. I think this was the stronger title compared to the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But again, we're at the point where a lot of these may be doing okay, but... not what I would consider just a sales juggernaut by any stretch. Now, the one I'm curious if we're going to see the second issue of on the list, certainly in the top 300, since we got the top 500, we will probably see it. Rank 215, we've got $6 Million Man number 1, 5,986 units. I really question if the writer had ever watched the show. I love the character and am tolerating the series.
Well... as much as I love the idea of a $6 million man comic, it does have a bit of the inherent problem that it's not a show that, at least in many of the major markets, spent a lot of time in syndication, at least not in the last 30 years. You got to be pretty old to really remember the $6 million man.
Yes, yes, I am. No, I agree with it. It's a character that really 70s and 80s after that, it was not that. Heck, by then, I think they were even done with the reunion movies.
Yeah.
It's one that I think is a tough one to do because of the technology bent on it and the era it was from. You either keep it as a period piece, which I think is not necessarily a bad move, or you've really got to amp up the technology.
Yeah.
And I think also the choice of the name to include the dollar amount kind of dates it a bit, too.
Fair enough.
Now, there is plans to do a movie based on the property. I'm not sure where they're at on that, though.
Take the Bionic Woman moniker. At least that way you don't have that $6 million figure in there.
Yeah, or if they do it, they bump it to billion. But even that's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, that, yes. Yeah, it's... Marvel and DC are filtered out, and I'm not looking at anything that goes makes me go, wow. You know, there's nothing particularly impressive here.
Rank 284, we've got Freeze number 4. That was the one they released saying, maybe we'll continue. 3,181 units. It's down over 15%. At that point, I could definitely see where they would have to question, do they want to continue with it or not? I think that those numbers could be viable. Not so certain how much at Image, because again, you've got that cost of the Image Eye. At least if they're going through the Image Central line. This one, it's top cow, I believe, so maybe they're not. But either way. I'd like to see more of it. I was enjoying it. And then certainly once we drop below the top 300, a lot of these are smaller books that often just operate on a different kind of playing field than certainly Marvel and DC books do.
Do you have a chart of the historic floor of the list?
Not handy. Let me see if I can do that with my handy dandy charting thing.
2650 just seems low, but that could be me misremembering where the floor of the list tends to be.
I've got one number that's popping up on this thing that's clearly anomalous, and it's throwing the scale off on this thing. Let me kick out a particular ship date so I can, let me find out which one that is real quick. Because once I get that one out, it'll recalibrate the
chart so you can read the rest of it.
Yes. Yes, it will. If I actually get the right shipping date.
Like I said, maybe it's not a particularly low point. It just feels like it. And again, that could be my memory. But again, 2,600 units, man, that's not very many.
It's not. And we've had lower. Unless this is actually doing not the actual floor, but it may be doing the floor, but not rank 300, which is what we want. Let me switch up how I'm doing this.
Yeah. Let me see what else is of interest in here. At rank 189, deadly class 37. Yes, it's only at 7944. That's actually up 4%, and the sales for that book are amazingly stable to maybe slightly pushing up the last 6 months. So that's a good sign, you'd think, for that book.
When did the TV show start?
2 or 3 months ago.
Okay.
Like February, I believe, maybe March.
I'm curious if that's playing into it or not.
Yeah, that obviously can't hurt, you would think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it dropped below 7,000 basically last May and has kind of been pushing back. It's also very inconsistent. This book came out in March. There was a book in January. The issue before that was last June. So yeah, it doesn't ship monthly either, which I'm sure doesn't help.
Yeah, I think when these things get off their kind of regular cadence or whatever, or just never establish one, that's problematic. There was one that I saw that I just didn't have time to dig into to find out if there was something that just didn't get fully reported last time or not. But if you look at the Invaders at rank 49, it seems to have bounced up almost 70%, 69.25%. But it almost looks like the previous issue maybe just wasn't, I don't know, fully recorded or something like that, because it went from initial sales of the first issue of Invaders of 37,462 down to 19,772, which seems reasonable, but then bounced up to 33,465, which seems a little weird, because I'm also not seeing like a variant cover on it. And certainly there was nothing in the story that would seem to indicate why it would bounce up like that. So it may just be they did a variant after the fact that wasn't in the original solicits.
Yeah, that is unusual.
So that's just one of those I couldn't quite explain. I hate those.
And looking at most things, you go 37, 19, 33, you'd go the problem's the second one. But as you said, 37 and 19 for a second issue at Marvel is not unusual.
Yeah.
So you can't automatically rule that out as the problematic one.
If this were like 10 issues in or something like that, I would just think that maybe the sales of that previous issue had kind of straddled months.
Yeah.
And just didn't get totally, you know, handled correctly or something like that. Or they massively overshipped the third issue for some reason. This is where having Eric on to see if he has any insights is always helpful.
Oh, you know what? You're right. The retail rank does.
Oh, yeah.
Something funky happened there.
You're right. It's got a retail rank of 117. Versus the items above it, below it, of 51 and 52. So they basically overshipped that, probably at about double.
Yeah, so maybe, okay. So maybe that is it.
And that would also explain Marvel Comic Presents number 3 a little at rank 60. It, too, is out of whack.
It is. Not nearly as badly, but it is.
Not as badly. Yeah, I don't always think to check the retail rank.
Well, but it's a more expensive book, so it could easily be double as well. And the price accounts for the retail rank not being as far out of whack.
But if you filter the list to 499 books, to where you would then have a comparable retail ranking, it's still...
Well, that's my point. Retail rank 46 is below it at as units. And you double 46, you still don't get to that 106. So they still could have easily double shipped that and still had that retail rank.
Yeah, or at least overshipped it, maybe not to the score of doubling it, but time and a half or something.
Well, based on the retail rank of Hulk Vereens, they could have triple shipped it.
Yeah, certainly it's a lot more copies out there than maybe there should be.
Yeah.
Those are just some of the shenanigans they pull. And I think there's a time and a place to get more copies out there. But I also think that if you've got to flood the market with it sometimes, it's not a good thing. Particularly that early in a title. Or both that early and that late in a title. It's not like they flooded it on the first issue to try to prime the pump.
Yeah.
That I could actually kind of get behind.
As I remember, we talked about this with Eric last couple months ago about one of the last times Marvel did this. Retailers weren't particularly thrilled with it because they ended up having to pay shipping on a bunch of books they could really never move.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to assume that the retailers are ordering in good faith what they think they can actually sell, and to send them a lot more than they need is a bit of an inconvenience for them, potentially.
Yeah.
And to particularly do it on a surprise basis or whatever. I mean, I recall back when sometimes, and this was, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, like those AOL CDs or whatever would be bound into comics. That would both damage the comics, increase the shipping weight, and stuff like that, that effectively, you know, the retailers were paying for the privilege. Not happy with it. Fortunately, that doesn't seem to happen as often.
Well, those things were ubiquitous. There was an era when you couldn't pick up a piece of paper, a book, a magazine, lean on a counter without tripping across one of those CDs.
Yeah, yeah. But arguably it worked. I mean, until it didn't. But at one point, AOL was huge.
Big enough that they got Time Warner to buy them.
Did they get Time Warner to buy them, or did they buy Time Warner? I forget. It was.
Well, yeah, actually, they bought Time Warner. Yeah, that merger is one of the great hostile takeover stories in corporate history.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful book about it if anyone's really interested. Yeah, there's not. I don't know. You seeing anything else that jumps out at you as particularly interesting?
Not really. A lot of these things are doing kind of the standard attrition they normally do.
Yeah.
Or a big up because of a variant cover, or a big drop because of a lack of a variant cover. And nothing that's just significantly out of place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Another one that appears to have a big jump, but it almost looks like that could have been, again, something weird with the last issue, is Rick and Morty. Tends to average recently around the 12,000 mark. At rank 144, but it shows it being up 26%, but that's because the last issue was down at 9,000 units, which is substantially lower than it normally tends to sell.
Yeah, but then 48 was above where the previous few issues had sold too, so...
Yeah, I don't know.
That one's bouncing around a bit.
It is, yeah.
I don't follow the property, so I don't know what would account for that. Let me do a quick chart of it real quick, see if that kind of shows anything of interest.
It was one of the few books we looked at a long time ago that was actually climbing through its mid-teen numbers and earlier.
It was climbing after, like, it had a first issue, a huge second issue drop, a little bit of a third, then was climbing up for a bit, was leveling off in early 2016, kind of arcing down through first quarter of 2017, then started climbing up until it hit a high point in May of last year, and then it's generally been dropping back down since.
But not consistently. It spikes all over the place, it looks like.
Yeah, it's got some definite ups and downs, but the general trend is more a little downward.
Down, yeah. And that's an Oni Press book. Do you have any comments on that merger that we heard about in the last few days?
Yeah, Oni and Lionforge are merging. It looks like a lot of the Oni leadership is staying. I'm curious how they're going to handle the branding on that.
Even though Lionforge bought them, basically, right?
They phrased it as a merger, but it seemed like Lionforge's parent company bought Oni.
Yeah.
But they seem to be keeping more of the Oni higher-ups, it sounded like. I don't know if it's going to be still one company, two brands, or how they're going to play all that out.
Well, because didn't it say what I can't remember the gentleman's name. The gentleman who's kind of the head of Lionforge, though, is kind of taking over as the head of both of them, right? Even if he's keeping some of the rest of his executives?
It sounded like, from what I was skimming, and I only skimmed it, that they were keeping more of the higher-ups over at Oni than Lionforge, other than the main guy at Lionforge. And it seems like somebody, Lionforge has really wanted to be in comics for a long time. having done the early stuff with Punky Brewster, Airwolf, Knight Rider, Saved by the Bell, aiming towards a more younger crowd, and then more recently getting into the superhero stuff with the Catalyst Prime stuff, also having bought out Magnetic Press to get some of the European comics in. They've bought out The Beat, so they've got their own comic news outlet. So certainly they're trying to build stuff up. I think incorporating Oni, not a bad move. Not going to say it's necessarily a brilliant move either. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. It seems like it could be good for both companies and all the titles on there, and I hope that it is. And certainly I feel sorry for anyone who's losing their job just because of a redundancy in positions.
It looks like the gentleman by the name of Dave Stewart from Lion Forge is kind of going to be the head guy at this now combined interest.
Yeah. I'm just curious what this means for the Catalyst Prime universe that they're starting to do a little retooling of with the 7 Days series coming up, and what it means for just the other Oni Press, and what identity is the combined company going to go under.
Mm.
I would almost lean towards Oni Press potentially being the better of the two to use, but I don't know. And some people on the Slack channel were suggesting that maybe they're starting to make a play to get in that mid-tier publisher area and become a premier publisher. And I think it's a little premature to think that'll happen. Certainly they may be trying for that. I just think even between the two companies, I don't know that they've got a big enough roster of notable titles to be ready for that.
I agree with that, yeah.
But at one point, I would have said the same about Boom. I would have said the same probably about maybe even IDW and such. So give them a few years, and maybe not even that long, and they could certainly grow into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think a consolidation of some of these mid-tier publishers is not a bad move if it can work out mutually beneficial for everybody, because you get certain economies of scale and whatnot that could be very, very good.
The Goon returned at rank 147 with a new number one at 12,423. I mean, not awful, but certainly, you know, nothing that's going to burn up the charts either.
No, but it's a creator-owned book, so I would say for that, it's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
We've got down at rank 178, Damage number 15, which is either the second to last or the last issue of that title. And it's down at 8,667 units, having dropped over another 5%, which leaves Silencers, the last New Age of Hero title standing, which is actually below it on the list at 7,949 units at rank 188.
Yeah.
Although actually there is one even further below, and it was, I believe, the actual last issue of Curse of Brimstone, number 12, at 7,152 units. So there's still a few more gasps of breath for that line
of
titles.
New Age of Heroes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, by and large, it was just end of a third quarter, nothing really lighting the world on fire. Really, some of the bigger movers and shakers were things that were either coming back for an issue or so, or gone for an issue or so in the month. Between things like Batman Who Laughs, skipping the month, but then having the Grim Knight one shot, or, you know, Return of Wolverine now being defunct and taking a chunk of sales with it and such.
Yeah.
But not a lot that just says, wow, this is, you know, amazing or noteworthy.
I will say this. We talked about the Hulk, Immortal Hulk earlier, and kind of how well it was doing. What I didn't realize is there are three issues of Immortal Hulk, 1, 12, and 13, on the reorder list in the top 300, and an additional six issues, 3, 7, 11, 9, 10, and 8, in the top 500. So that is obviously a strong indicator for that book. If you've got 9, 10 issues on this list, with 9 of them being reordered.
Yeah. Immortal Hulk was one of the big movers and shakers in terms of reorder activity this month.
Yeah. So clearly there's interest in that title.
Yeah. And it's been getting a lot of buzz. A lot of people are, happy with it and stuff. So I think that's great. It was a little darker than I personally cared for, which is why I dropped it. But, that was partially because it was doing what it was doing well, and I just didn't care for what it was doing.
Well, you know, it's, yeah, you know, you always say the same thing about horror titles. if they're really good, you're not going to like them.
Well, and it's going more of almost a horror kind of a title.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for, and I think they're succeeding in that, and it's just not what I want to read.
I was going to say, we can look at the price breakdown, but at this point, that's almost pointless. $3.99 is just all of it.
Yeah, it's the lion's share of it. $4.99 is the other one of note. And then, yeah, you get a couple of things at $7.99 or whatever, but really, once you're past $3.99 and $4.99, everything else is negligible.
And I guess there weren't any true believers, so I don't see any $1 books. So, yeah, and it's 259 $3.99 issues, 22 $4.99 issues, 8 $7.99 issues, and then ones, twos, and threes at some other price points, and only 5 $2.99 books remaining.
Yeah, no true believers this time around. We'll probably get it again next month. Because they don't do them every month, but usually when they do, they're good for about 100,000 units of sales across them.
Yeah.
And they're starting to do the facsimile editions as well at a higher price point, and I think that'll do well for Marvel also.
And those are all the way up at $3.99, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I think I think DC's missing the boat by not kind of seeing where Marvel is having success and doing something similar. But I think DC is just not in the best of places at the moment.
To be fair, now that I look at it, I'm assuming at rank 13, the Incredible Hulk, 181, which, for as much as we praise the Immortal Hulk, outsold it, is a facsimile edition, correct?
It is a facsimile edition, and I think I need to update my system to more accurately reflect that.
Okay, so yeah. So the best-selling Hulk book, for as well as Immortal's doing, is a reprint from a book 40-plus years old.
Yeah, but it's, again, it was issue 181.
It's the Wolverine one.
Yeah, so I can definitely see where Marvel's having success with that. I wonder if they're going to have enough key issues to be churning a couple of these out on a regular basis. I got to imagine they will. There's plenty of history to pick from. This was a month where we, other than the Detective Comics 1000, didn't really have anything that just made a huge splash in terms of a launch or a massive cratering or something like that. They were just, it was okay.
Total losses and total gains is actually interesting this year because it's a net, or this month because it's a net positive, which we don't see very often.
Yeah, but again, you have something like a
Detective Comics that screws that whole thing up.
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things that you look at how the chart of the unit sales are going, and it doesn't look too bad or whatever, but it's also one of those things that it doesn't really kind of accurately reflect the real kind of sales stuff, again, because we had a couple of cover shenanigans. Certainly we had the Detective Comics 1000 and such. I'm kind of expecting sales to be down a little next month. I mean, they may not be, but it's even money that they could be down, I don't know, maybe 500,000 units or more.
Well, there certainly won't be Detective, and there won't be a Doomsday Clock, and there might not be a Batman Who Laughs, and there might, looks like it might not be a Heroes in Crisis. So, yeah, it could be down. It could also be significantly a bad month for DC.
Yeah, it really comes into things like, I'm pretty sure War of the Realms kicked in, so that could easily top the list and skew things in Marvel's favor. Or it could be that a lot of those side miniseries, they've put too much in it, and those don't do well.
Yeah, those are always possible.
So we'll know before too long, because as we're recording this, the top 10 for April is already out. So tomorrow I should have the rest of the data to start crunching that. Again, they were a little late than usual getting the March numbers out, and then followed it up surprisingly quickly with the next set. But, you know, hey, that happens. I appreciate them releasing the numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action.
All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.